first speakers, Felicia Barnett, who's joining us from U.S. EPA and the Office of Research and Development, to provide some opening remarks. Felicia, whenever you're ready, please begin.
All right. Thank you, Jean. I just want to welcome everybody to the second in our series of three seminars on the utilization of ProUCL statistical software tool. As Jean introduced, and those from the first seminar may remember, my name is Felicia Barnett. I'm the director of EPA's Office of Research and Development Site Characterization and Monitoring Technical Support Center. I'm going to refer to it from the acronym SEMTSC from here on out. The SEMTSC supplies technical support on hazardous waste characterization issues to the EPA regions and program offices and was created and provides ProUCL as a part of that function. ProUCL is a statistical software package tool free on the EPA website for the analysis of environmental data sets with and without non-detect observations. It provides statistical methods and graphical tools to address many environmental sampling and statistical issues. Though it's not intended to be able to address every situation nor to be the only option for environmental statistical analysis, it was developed to be an easy-to-use option for many standard statistical issues encountered when evaluating data. The second seminar in the series will focus on using ProUCL for trend analysis. As Jean said, the first seminar in the series is already available for viewing online if you are unable to attend or want to view specific parts at your own pace. We hope you find ProUCL to be a useful tool and that these seminars assist you with understanding both its capabilities and navigating its program. We will be responding to all questions here and during the session or after and documenting those answers on ClueIn. Additionally, SEMTSC supplies internal and some limited external responses to those who use it. If anyone has questions or issues with using ProUCL, we do try to answer those as much as possible. On the ProUCL website, you can find under the contacts my name and my contact information. I recommend contacting me via email with as much detail as possible, including screenshots. We will try to respond to your questions quickly. I'm going to now turn the seminar on ProUCL utilization over to Travis Lincoln-Hatfield and Polona Carson with Neptune, Inc. to start the instruction on the data. Thank you. Travis?
Thanks, Felicia. Yep. Hello. So thank you, guys. And also thanks, everyone, for joining us for our second part of the ProUCL series. As Jean and Felicia mentioned, we'll be focusing on the trend analysis features in ProUCL today. However, I'm not going to be the one that's giving the majority of the presentation. Polona Carson will be doing that, but I figured real quick I'd give just a nice little recap of what we talked about in our first one, just since some of those aspects we're going to be reusing today. So really what we talked about for most of our last presentation was really getting to look at exploratory data analysis inside of ProUCL, looking at, you know, our summary statistics and different graphical methods, including box plots and histograms and whatnot. And then we also explored goodness of fit tests, as well as QQ plots to assess the normality of data, which is something that will definitely be coming up today. We also looked at outliers and options for hypothesis testing in ProUCL. So while we're going to be definitely using the goodness of fit test stuff today again, I hope everybody either got to maybe watch it last time or watch it in between since it was recorded. But if not, hopefully we don't totally lose you. Other than that, as Jean and Felicia mentioned, it's definitely available online, and so will this one be as soon as we're done. But with that in mind, I think I'll turn it over to Polona, and we can get started talking about trend analysis.
Thank you, Travis. So today we will look at ProUCL features for trend analysis. First, we will look at the some exploratory tools. So time series is a nice tool for that. And then we will continue with tests for trend analysis. So the first two are non-parametric trend test, Mann-Kendall and Thiel-Sand test. And then in second half of today's webinar, we will look at ordinary least square regression. or some of you may know it also as linear regression. So now I just want to mention that, like in previous session presented by Travis, I will try to keep the statistical jargon as low as possible and do my best to explain it so that practitioners in audience can follow without hopefully too much trouble. So as Felicia already mentioned, Pro-UCL software is intended for basic statistical calculation used in evaluation of contaminated sites. So today we will be touching a little bit more advanced techniques. So if you have questions, please ask them during the session, and Jean and Travis will monitor them, so we will then try to answer as many as possible. But if we have more, then the answers will be available at later time. So at this point, I just want to refresh our memory from previous time that ProUCL software is accompanied by two valuable documents. These are user guide and technical guide. You can find them both in documents folder of your ProUCL installation folder. So consult those when you're working on your project if you don't know where to go exactly. They're really valuable resources, but if you still have a issue where to go, then it's probably a time to consult a statistician and ask for help with your analysis. So at this point, if we can please share my screen, so that I can start demonstration of ProUCL.
Oh, Polona's screen, not my screen, Jean.
I have it here.
Oh, okay, cool.
Try.
Sorry, Jean.
Screen. It's working. Share. So we should be good now, I hope. Can you see the group?
Yep.
Okay, good. Okay, so we are good now. So just a few navigational remarks. So here in this middle gray center is where we do all the analysis. So when we see the data and the output of the analysis, on the left-hand side, we have a navigation panel where ProUCL displays a list of open data sets and generated outputs. ProUCL does assign kind of self-explanatory output files, but if you want to make them more meaningful for your application, then you just go to File and Save. We don't have anything loaded, so I can't show you that. But it would be File, Save File, and then you can rename it however you want. And then this bottom log panel, it's displaying in green color basically the log of all the actions that you are performing. In orange color are displayed warning messages, and in red color it displays the error messages. So those two, orange and red, are something that you may want to pay attention if you don't think you are not accomplishing what you want to do with the software. Let's hope we won't have those today during the presentation. So we will be using two data sets today. They both are available within the data folder in ProUCL. So they are some of the training data sets available. You can also download them from the CLUIN site for today's webinar. So, but to make it easier for this training, I created myself a folder so that I can reach them quickly. So let me, these two files are MW189 that we will just use it a little bit at the beginning of the demonstration. And then for the most of the parts, we will use Trend MW real data. So before we go further, I just want to make a few remarks on non-detects. Two data sets that we will be using today, they don't include non-detects. So we won't be using them in today's demonstration. But as many of you are facing that, So I just want to help you a little bit with how to deal with them in trend analysis. So the first thing that I want to highlight is that high non-detects create problems, and they should be removed before the analysis. So the reason for this really high non-detects, and I mean non-detects that are very close to the highest detect value, is the limitation of the laboratory to perform the analysis. They need to dilute the samples many times, and especially when they analyze several analytes simultaneously, they need to make a compromise between the dilution and the contamination, possible contamination of the analytical system. So they can't always go back if it's high non-detect. They can always go back and reanalyze at the less dilution, because they may contaminate the system. Or sometimes it can be also because of the interference with some other contaminants present in the sample. So in this case, if you see those really high non-detects, a good practice is to also sometimes to reach out to the laboratory and get a little bit of insight how they were the samples were analyzed. So two rules of thumb how to treat the non-detects. If they are greater than highest detects, then you are quite safe to reject them. If you have non-detects that are about 10 times higher than lowest detected value, then use judgment and you may reach to the laboratory or just do some investigation to get a feel for how those non-detects were obtained, and then make a decision based on that if you want to reject them. So when you have a data set with non-detects, you can use one of the substitution methods. So the two common substitution methods are the half of, you can substitute the value with half of reporting limit or half of the detection limit. But this makes sense to do only when you have less than 10 to 15% of the non-detects. So when you are dealing with a lot of non-detects in your data set, I really strongly suggest that you work with statistician and consult how you want to go about that kind of data set. So this is about non-detects. So now let's go to time series plot for our first data set. So I'm going to open my MW189 data set. So, and I will use those first two columns. So the index of the column is 0 and 1. So we see we have data set for a few wells. And then here is the manganese value concentration in groundwater. This data set is really nice to show you the capability of ProUCL to group parameters. So many times you want to display like several, you want to compare several wells. So I'm going to do this now. The time series plot is found under statistical tests, trend analysis. And here in the bottom, we have time series plot. And I will select this time just data only. So in measured data, we will put our concentration of the contaminant. And here we have this grouping, select group column. So I will click this little arrow here and select well ID. So now let's look under options. So we have event label here. All those labels can be changed however you want them, time series, trend analysis, so that's the title of the graph. We can change that. But one thing I want to do at this point is I want to click this little box here, group graphs. And okay. So and here we have now this nice plot comparing three wells on the same graph. So really nice feature, really easy to do in ProUCL. You may want to use this feature sometimes also to compare contaminants, but if you'd want to do that, then you need to be aware that the scaling may be an issue if you have contaminants in really different concentration ranges. So you just need to play a little bit with that option. So now I want to open our main data set, the other one, that we will use from now on through the most of the presentation. So this is Trend MW real data. I have a little mark here because I cheated a little bit for the later in the demonstration, added a column. So I'm going to now do the same trend time series plot on time in days and MW28 variable. So just a quick look at this time in days. We have a few instances here where we have a repeated measurement at the same sampling event. So if you have those, make sure that you put in time column the same annotation. Now, and statistical tests, trend analysis, time series plot again. This time I will use the event data part. So under event, it will go our time in days, and under measure data, MW20A. We don't have grouping parameter now, so all the options can stay the same. We don't need to group graphs now because we don't have it. Okay, so this is our time series plot now. So before we jumped into further statistical analysis, I just want to refresh some statistical terms, as this is where many non-statisticians especially struggle. So in trend analysis, we always deal with two variables. And our data are collected in time intervals. So our variable on interest, so this is the contaminant in most cases, is called a dependent variable, and it will be plotted on the y-axis. So this is here our contaminant dependent variable. The other variable that affects the response, and it's normally set by the design, so basically we beforehand we kind of determine time intervals, let's say when we will sample groundwater. This variable is displayed on x-axis, and it's called independent or exploratory variable, just so that we have those terms refreshed. So, and now let's go into our statistical tests for trend analysis. The first test that we will look at is a non-parametric Mann-Kendall test. So I will use again this trend MW real data, statistical tests, trend analysis, Mann-Kendall. This is where we will find it. So the benefit of basically both non-parametric tests, Mann-Kendall and Tilsen, is that they don't have any underlying assumptions about the distribution of the data. So we don't need to think about distribution. We don't need to worry about maybe transforming the data. But it's a first step in trend analysis to do those tests. So let's look now at the Mann-Kendall first. Measured value, MW28, and time in days as event. One thing I want to highlight here is that the data You collect them in time, and you do need to pay attention that you organize them that way in the when you are input them in the table, so that they are ordered by time. We don't have grouping parameter, but under option, so you select your confidence level. The standard confidence level is 95%. We will display graphics. We can leave this regression line, as sometimes it helps to visualize what's going on with data. And click OK. OK. So here is our table with the results. We have some general information about the data and test up here, then general statistics in the next section, and in the bottom we see the result of the main candle analysis. So here is the statistics. The p-value is really small, and we have this message helping us to interpret the results, statistically significant evidence of decreasing trend. So now let's look this trend test graphics. So here is a plot. It's again like the jagged plot is time series plot, and then I added this regression line which helps to visualize what's going on with the data, and on the right hand side we have again the main candle test table and the interpretation, so statistically significant evidence of decreasing trend in this data. So that the main candle test only gives us the idea about the monotonicity of the trend. So basically what does that mean is if the trend is consistently decreasing or increasing, but it doesn't give us any information about the slope of the trend. So the rate of the with which the contaminant concentration is increasing or decreasing. So one benefit of this test is that we can perform it with as little as 4 data points. So you need to know that if you have a really small data set, the power of this test is very low, and so the test may not detect the trend even if the trend is present. But let's say in groundwater analysis, we keep sampling and adding points. So over time, we are gathering more and more evidence and basically increasing the power of this test as we are adding the data. So eventually, the test will detect it. So this is about the main candle test. Now we can go to the next step and do, so we see here this decreasing trend. Now we can go to the next step, perform TIL-SAN test, as this test gives us a little bit more information. So it does give us some idea about the rate of the decay of the contaminant and the slope of it. So I'm selecting again my data set, going to statistical test, trend analysis, TIL-SAN. We need to again select our variables, time, under options. Let's display TIL-SAN trend line. And this is a really nice feature. So previously I pointed out the averaging replicates. So previously I pointed out that this data set contains a few events when several samples were obtained at the same time interval. So here we have 705 twice, 926 twice, and at 1,535 days, it was also 2 samples were taken. So what this, when you click this box, the results will be averaged. And this is really important as TIL-SAN test only requires one, can only handle one data point at each sampling event. So Let's see now at the analysis. So immediate advantage of this test is that we can estimate slope as opposed to that just the identification of increasing or decreasing trend with Mann candle test. Since slope is negative, and let me just pull down the result. So here we have the values. So slope is negative, p-value is really small. So that confirms the Mann candle test. One really nice thing about this method is that it's relatively robust against extreme values, because what it does is still send test finds the median slope and it fits that slope. So basically it divides the points that we have available into two sections. So half of them will be above the line, half of them will be below the line. And because of that, it's a robust against a single or maybe a couple of extreme values. It's basically the alternative to ordinary least square regression, but the downside of this test is that it can only handle one observation at each sampling point. So here is now this plot. This is that regression line at median slope. So we see that it kind of divides the points in two sections. Half of them below, half of them above. So, and another disadvantage of this test is that it does require a fair amount of data to provide us the reliable conclusions. But when it's paired with a Mann candle test, so we can use it to confirm the sign of the slope. So do we have a decreasing or increasing trend? And it gives us additional information about the rate of the change in contaminant, because it does give us that estimate of the slope. Here is now a time for a short break before we go to the ordinary least square regression. So if we can have a couple of quiz questions.
Yeah. And then we'll also be taking a couple quick question and answer section right after this as well.
Okay, so I'll remind the audience that there's still an opportunity to send in questions using the Q&A window in the lower corner. We're going to turn on a quiz in the upper portion of your screen and test your knowledge. There'll be some questions that will appear, and you can click on the answer that you think is correct, and then we'll keep track of who's scoring well. So our first question is appearing now. And remember, just click on the box that you think is the correct answer. And the quiz scorer will keep track and let you know if you got that right or wrong. The sooner you pick the right answer, the sooner and higher your score will be. And it looks like we've got some people who knew their stuff. All right, moving on to our second question. This one seems to be tripping a few people up, but a handful of you got that one correct. Okay, just reminding everybody. All right, so with that, we'll go ahead and go back to our split screen view and take a quick break for questions. I'm going to start here earlier on. And this first question comes in asking if ProUCL can use J-coded values for trend analysis.
Yeah, so by J-coded, I'm assuming you mean non-detects. And I clicked that question for us to go over because you all sent in a bajillion questions regarding non-detects, which I totally understand. But in ProUCL right now, there's not a great way to have it directly handle your non-detect problem, which is why we kind of decided we would give some general rules of thumb if you wanted to take a look at it basically. But really, if you're trying to do trend analysis and you have interesting sets of non-detects in your data, you should probably consult a statistician, because depending on how your data is set up, how many different detection limits you have, what percent of your data are non-detects, all those different confounding factors, you're going to get different answers each time. And I think, Gene, this also follows into the second question of wouldn't the substitution method of, doing half the detection limit or whatnot, artificially alter the distribution of the data and decrease the variance? The answer is yes, that totally could do that. However, it with non-detects, the entire time you're making the best of a bad situation. And how to do that, again, is really going to come down to a case-by-case basis. And not to beat a dead horse here, but you're going to want to consult a statistician if there's something that isn't immediately solvable to you. And in the case of lots of non-detects, multiple detection limits, that is a not easily solvable situation, I would say. So sorry to kind of breeze over all of those non-detect questions, but basically the answer is consult a statistician.
Okay. I'm going to bounce back to some questions about dates and times in the data set you've been working with. One of the attendees noted that the data set didn't appear to have a column for the date of the sampling event, and they were wondering if ProUCL automatically converts the dates to a corresponding event number, or is it calculating the number of days in between these events?
No, so I believe Polona mentioned earlier, but just in case it got missed. So ProUCL needs to have numbers in the date column. So regardless of if you want to put in, you know, March 3rd, 2020, like that's not going to work. You're going to need to convert it to either a numeric representation of date or time or sampling event. You can either do that by just saying a sort of set of number of weeks after an initial sampling event or days or months, or if you're going back and forth from maybe different software, you can convert things to a POSIX CT setup where it is counting a number of seconds from a given starting point. That's going to give you a little bit of a weird x-axis, but it might play a little better if you're bopping back and forth between, you know, say R or Python or what have you. But in ProUCL, your time variable does need to be numeric, not a character or date string.
And if I can just add here that it's really easy in Excel to basically convert the date into the number of days between the events.
Yeah.
Okay. And I did just want to comment. I see a lot of the dialogue and comments that are coming in from what I believe are statisticians about how to handle J values and whether they're estimates or they're documents that something is there. We just can't be certain of what the value is, so you can't zero it out. So I just wanted to thank everybody who's been chiming in with comments and input on how to handle J-coded values. And I will certainly work to take these input back to the team. This could be a topic for a future webinar in and of itself. So thanks for everybody who's chimed in with those messages. I think just in the interest of time, we have about 50 minutes left. Why don't we transition back to the presentation content and demonstration? But we will pause again for Q&A, and I will encourage those participants to keep sending those questions and comments on in. If you happen to join us late, remember, if we don't get to your question live, the instructors will be working to get a written response available to other questions that were submitted that we may not have addressed live during the webinar. So with that, I'll turn it back to Travis and Polona.
Okay, so yeah, I will pick up from here again. So the third option for trend analysis in ProUCL is ordinary least square regression. This is the most advanced method of the three, but it gives us also the most information. So without getting in depth on the math of ordinary least square regression, what it's really trying to do is to fit a line between the data points that maximizes the square distance between the points and the line. So Since this is the more, a little bit more advanced analysis, I'm first providing you the steps how to go about it. So first you select dependent and independent variable, then fit the regression. So, and then you need to evaluate the model, the regression model that you get. So first you go through the step of evaluation, then you need to check the assumptions that they were met. So there are three assumptions. We will explain to them a little bit later, but you need to check them. And then based on the evaluation of the model and assumptions, you interpret your results. So, okay, let's go ahead and analyze our data set with ordinary least square regression feature. So I'm selecting again this trend MW real data set, and I'm going into statistical test, and ordinary least square regression is just about the other trend analysis options. So now here we have this dependent variable. Remember, dependent variable is our variable of concern. So the contaminant, MW28. And then we have independent variable, which is our time in days. Under options, you select the confidence level. We want to display the regression table with regression results. We will display the diagnostic as well, just to take a look at it. And we want to display the regression plot. On regression plot, we also want confidence interval and prediction interval for this demonstration. So, okay. Here we display the results, but let me first pop up the regression. So this is now the regression line. The gray dotted line in the middle, it's our fitted regression line. Two green lines on this plot are confidence intervals of the mean, and two red plots are prediction intervals. So let me explain the meaning of the confidence and prediction interval in as plain language as I can do that. So 95 confidence interval is if we take a bunch of samples at a time, let's say here we have a point at 160. If we would take several samples at that time and then average them, we expect the mean of those samples to be within the green lines 95% of the time. So, but then on the other hand, if we only take one random sample at this same time, we expect the value of that sample to be 95% of the times between the red lines. So we are 95% confident that its value will be within the red lines. So here on this plot, we have also the results of the regression analysis. But at this point, I will move back to the table because we have a little bit more information there. So let's look at how we interpret the rest of the results for regression. Here in the middle, we have regression estimates and interference table. So in regression, we are estimating two parameters, intercept and slope of the regression line. These are the values for the estimates. And on your slide, you see under that table, it's a regression model, so regression equation. So our contaminant, it's equal to intercept, so which is 2,164, minus, as we have a decreasing trend, so it's negative slope, minus 1.637 times time. Ordinary least square regression gives us more information as the TILSAN. So it gives us the estimates of the error of those parameters, parameter estimates. So here is this estimate of the error. And then it performs the t-test for significance of those parameters. So basically it evaluates how strong is the relationship between two of our observed variables. What we really care about it is the p-value of the slope. So as this is the measure of how good is the model. How strong is the relationship between two parameters. So p-value is really small in this case, so we have a strong relationship between the two variables. If p-value is large, what does that mean is that slope is zero. So basically the slope is constant, there is no relationship between the variables. So slope with negative, that's nice as we have again agreement with the previous two tests, which we hope that will be the outcome. And we can move from this point down to the next table. So in the second table, we have another table. We have sources of variation broken down in regression, which means how much of the variability is explained with the model that we just built, so with the equation that we just formed. The error term is unexplained variation, and then this total is basically the sum of two. It's the total variation. Here on the right-hand side, we have an F-test for regression, and here I want to mention that this is basically the only part really in regression analysis that is sensitive to non-normality of the residuals. I will explain what residuals are in a moment, but I want to highlight it that there is really no requirement for normality of our data, but it's all assumptions are about the residuals. So p-value is small, which again confirms that our model shows a strong relationship between the two variables. Here on the bottom, we have R-square, and probably most of you are very familiar with that, and many times practitioners, especially, they are making most of the decisions based on the R-square. So adjusted R-square, it's a little bit more conservative. So that's why I'm suggesting you to basically to use a adjusted R-square as a measure of another measure of to evaluate the model. So what it means, this number, is basically that 83.3% in this case of variation is explained by this regression model. So basically, the meaning is percent of variability explained by the regression model. It's not the best measure. We still need to look into the assumptions, but it gives us some ideas about how good is the model. So main advantages of the ordinary least square regression are that it's a pretty standard approach. So most of the users are fairly familiar with it. It provides a lot of more information than either of the non-parametric tests. So beside of estimate for slope and intercept, we also get quite some information about the uncertainty of both parameters. Regression analysis also provides us confidence bands. So those confidence bands, they can be used to determine compliance with fixed standards, so cleanup levels, even when the trend is apparent. So even when concentration of the pollutant is changing, we can still use those confidence bands to compare with cleanup standards and make conclusions. So the downsides of the regression analysis are that it's really sensitive to extreme outliers and underlying assumption. There are three assumptions for residuals that we need to check to make final conclusion about the results and about the regression model. So in the next step, I will show you how to go about the residual analysis. But first, let's just explain what residual are. So if we take our regression equation that we talked about a little bit ago and plug in time in days, the results that we get are called fitted values or model outcomes. So, and because our model doesn't perfectly fit the data, we said before that this model for our training data explains about 83% of variation. So the fitted values are different from the observation. So the residuals are actually the difference between the two. Observed values minus fitted values gives us the residuals. Regression analysis in ProUCL give us this bottom table, regression table, where we have the fitted values that are marked with Y hat and residuals. So it calculates that for us. And there are three assumptions that we need to check. So first, they all are related to residuals. The first one is constant variance or homoscedasticity of residuals. We need to confirm that residuals are independent and that residuals are normally distributed. So remember, there is no requirement for data itself to be normally distributed, but these requirements need to hold for the residuals. So many times checking these assumptions is kind of overlooked, but we do need to check them. So I will show you now how to do that. We need to do a little bit of extra work. So we need to copy this part of the regression table. And the easiest way is to copy it and paste it in Excel and then open it again in Excel. So when you do that, sometimes when you paste this data in the Excel, you have a leading blank spaces that they don't let you do the analysis because that makes the values not numerical. So we provided you on the slide a helpful trick to remove those leading spaces. They are listed there, but I'm not going to, for the sake of time, I'm not going to demonstrate it. So as I did that before so that we can just move on with the ProUCL and focus on ProUCL features. So I'm opening now my file with residuals.
You'll need to switch it to XLSX because that's how it goes.
Okay. Yeah, thank you, Travis. It's the XLS file, sorry. So residual analysis, this one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So here we have now the same table that we pulled into the ProUCL. And what we do now, we will basically use the time series plot to make some plots of those residuals. The first plot that I will create is the residuals, plotted residuals versus fitted value. So I'm selecting this data set, statistical test, trend analysis, time series plot. We will need the event data. And now I'm plotting on the event, so on the x-axis, I'm plotting fitted values, so y hat. And on the y-axis I'm plotting our residuals. And hit OK. So now I will do this plot a little bit nicer so that we are not too distracted. I'm going into properties, series. I want this to be scatter plot, and I'm going to make bullets a little bit bigger so that it will be easier to see. Apply. Okay. So this is now our plot, time series, and I can just show you also quickly how to change the title. So you right click and this little menu pops up. You can edit title, residuals versus fitted values. Okay, so we want this picture to be, this scatter of the plots to be as random as possible. So this is not completely random, but it's not the worst that I've seen. So in this case, I'm good with it. I would say variance is roughly constant, as this plot tells us about the first assumption, is the variance of residuals constant. So roughly it is, we will say, okay, first assumption is satisfied. Now let me look the second one. The second one, the second plot is to check the second assumption for independence. So I will again create a time series plot of residuals, and this time I will plot them against their consecutive event number. So basically, so let me pull the data. Time series plot again with event. This time event is our observation. So this column that just tells us the number of the observation. Observation and residuals. Again, the we will create, oopsie, sorry for that, observations, residuals, okay, where's the plot? Working. Try again. All options are okay. So or let me just explain to you. So we will create the same plot. It's on the slide. So similar plot. We want a scatter of plots to be random, and we don't want to see any unusual patterns. So if you see on the slide that is presented, you can see at the second part, half of the slide, if maybe Travis, if you can get with the green error, or it's some kind of curvature. So we don't want those curvatures in the plot. That's an indication that we have a lack, what is called lack of fit. So in this case, the second assumption is not completely satisfied. So we can move on now to the third assumption. The third assumption is about the normality of the residuals. So and to prove or disprove the normality of the residuals, we will do the goodness of fit test. So I will again pull this table, go to statistical test, goodness of fit, we want the one for normality, and we want to perform this test on residuals. Okay, let's cross our fingers that this will work. It does. So here we see those points, they are very close to the line, so this is not perfect, but it's reasonable line. And if we look at the results of the normality test here on the right-hand side, we see here in the middle part, where I'm circling now, it says data appear normal. So this test confirmed that our residuals are normally distributed, so the third assumption is also confirmed. So to summarize, if any of the assumptions are substantially violated, and ordinary least square regression has a little bit of forgiveness. So if the assumption is violated, that may indicate that the trend is either non-linear or the magnitude of the variance is not independent of the mean concentration level. So we have a lack, what we call a lack of fit. What does that mean is that the model that we build is not perfect. So we can improve it, but there is an opportunity to improve it. But when this really matters, when we want to improve the model, this really matters when we are interested for predictions. If you just want to evaluate whether you have a trend present, a downward or upward trend in your data, then even not a perfect model will show you that. But if you want to predict, or if you want to make conclusions about the rate of the decay, in that case, you want to improve the model. So the pro-UCL is very limited in what kind of improvements you can make. And basically, the only improvement of the model that we can handle in the pro-UCL is transforming the data. And even that is not really encouraged. So we need to make, again, some extra steps with the data. But the other options are like adding the variables or adding the polynomial terms. But these are more advanced techniques when I strongly recommend you to go to statistician and work with statisticians so that if you want to predict. So before we jump into transforming the data, as I will demonstrate that, how you can do it, I want to give you some additional guidelines when you can kind of get an information from the site if transformation of the data is the right way to go. So if you have a visible exponential decay expressed as exponential trend on the time series plot, then that may be a consequence of the first order reaction. So in this case, the rate of the decay of contaminant is proportional to the amount of contaminant present. So more contaminant present in the media that you are observing, faster is the decay. So a practical example of this is the dilution of contaminant in groundwater with no desorption of it from the soil. So in this case, when we know that these kind of reactions can be present on the site and we see the exponential pattern in our data, the log transforming data makes sense. So another case may be that we have a zero order reaction which is expressed as a monotone linear decay rate. So it's basically the decay rate that is limited by a limiting factor. And it's constant instead of exponential. So some examples of zero order reactions that may be going on in the media are biodegradation limited by toxicity of contaminant, or oxygen limited or micronutrient limited biodegradation, or we have maybe a sorbed contaminant that is desorbing as fresh groundwater dilutes contaminant concentration. So in this case, transformation of data won't help. But if we see that the model is not perfect, we need to take some other approach. So options are nonlinear fit, so our polynomial regression, or adding more exploratory variables, but these are advanced techniques that they need the assistance of statistician, and they also need some better software with more capabilities. So now let's show me how you can do the transformation. For transformation, you will need to go to Excel and add additional column to your data, where you basically in Excel or some other spreadsheet software, you add the log transformed variable. So here in my spreadsheet, I already done that. Just so if you want to take a note, I use the natural logarithm. You can do the logarithm of 10 as well, but I used the natural logarithm so that you can replicate what I'm working on here. So, and now we can repeat the regression analysis with this log transform variable. There are some downsides of the regression with log transformed data, so it's really probably this is the time to go to a statistician, but just for some of you that may be a little bit more advanced, I will demonstrate how you can do that in ProUCL. So I will, instead of the variable in original scale, I will use now the log transformed as a dependent variable, and then again the time in days as independent variable. Okay. So we first, as similar as before, we will first look at the regression plot. So regression plot here with the confidence and prediction intervals. We see a little bit of waviness in those points around the regression plot, but it's not too bad. So now let's look at the results of the regression. Again, I will switch to the spreadsheet because it has more information. So in a regression estimates table, we have intercept and slope. Remember now that these are log transform data, so the values may not be straightforward to interpret in terms of the rate of the decay, let's say. P-values. The test for the, so here are the errors. Let's look at the p-value for slope. P-value is small, so which indicates that there is a relationship between the statistically significant relationship between the dependent and the independent variables, so between the contaminant and time. In ANOVA table, we have the error terms, and here is the statistical test for regression. So statistical test indicates that regression is statistically significant, and if we look at adjusted R-square as indication, one of the indicators for regression, so the adjusted R-square we said before, it's more conservative, it's a little bit higher now, 0.874, which many people would quickly say, okay, we have a better model. But remember, we really can't make final conclusions before we look at the residuals. So here on the bottom, we have again residual table. So you will take the same steps as before, take this table in Excel and then bring it in the ProUCL. I prepared that data table in Excel already, so I will open it now.
It should be XLS
again. Yeah, it should be XLS again. I think I have it here in log, yeah, for logged regression. So these are my residuals for logged regression. So I'm opening now this table. So you see here log transform data. These are fitted values and residuals. So we will again repeat the same plots as we did before for diagnostic of the regression model. So first I'm going to plot residuals versus fitted values. I'm going to the data table. Statistical test, trend analysis, so we will use again time series plot and tweak it a little bit, just the same as before. Residuals as measured data, y hat as event, so on x-axis, I'm hitting OK, here is our plot now. I'm tweaking it, going to properties, series, scatter plot. I'm making bullets a little bit bigger so that it's easier to see. Okay. So we said before, for checking the first assumption, we want this scatter to be as random as possible. Its assumption is that the residuals are have a constant variance. So this picture, it's not too bad. So I would say first assumption is approved, that the variance is reasonably constant. Now let's create the second plot for the to check the second assumption. That's residuals versus event. So I'm taking residuals into measured value on y and observation as event on x part. Okay, ooh, this time it worked. Nice. I'm tweaking it again. Series, scatter plot. It's just, it's always better to look at scatter plots so that we are not distracted with the line. So this time we see this curvature maybe even more pronounced. It's going in the other direction, so upwards, but it's maybe even more pronounced. So this definitely indicates that there is a lack of fit. So the residuals are not completely independent. And now the third assumption, we need to do another goodness of fit test on these residuals for long-term formed data. So let me do that. I'm going to log the regression, statistical test, goodness of fit for norm. We want to check for normality. I'm taking residuals. Okay. So this plot doesn't look that nice now. Let me just make those bullets a little bit bigger so that we see better. We see this waviness now around the QQ plot. And if we look at the outcome of that goodness of fit test, here in the middle it says data not normal. So the third assumption definitely is not confirmed. So now, what did we learn from all this? So you really can't rely on R-square. R-square in this case was a little bit better, but it really didn't reveal the problem with residuals. You need to look at the residuals. You need to check the assumptions, as they give us a lot of information about the regression model. So plotting residuals will actually reveal the lack of fit of the model. What we haven't seen in our example, but it will also show on residual plots, is extreme values, outliers. They will be really pronounced. So that's another reason why to take time and analyze residuals. So, and another point to remember is that when you can't confirm the assumptions and for the residuals, it's, and you do have a need to improve the model so that you can do some predictions, then that is definitely a time to work with statistician and find a way to best analyze your data. So this brings us almost to the end of this first session. The next slide that we will see on the screen is the comparison of three trend tests that we explored today. So at the beginning, we looked at the two non-parametric tests that are both a nice starting point when we are looking for trends in the data. So Mann-Kendall will tell us if we have a consistent or monotone trend, so steadily increasing or steadily decreasing. The nice thing about this test is that it may give us reasonable outcome with as little as 4 points, but remember the power of the test when we have really small data test is low. So even if the trend is present, it may not show because of the low power of the test. So the next test, non-parametric test, is TILSEN. It identifies the trend, so it confirms the trend observed with Mann-Kendall test, and it also gives us a slope estimate. But on, for the contrast of the Mann-Kendall test, it requires a fair amount of data, and it only works when we have one observation per time interval. However, nice feature in ProUCL is that it averages repeated measurements at the same sampling event. So if you have repeated measurements, remember to check that box in the menu. And then the third method that we looked at today, and it's available in ProUCL, is OLS regression. So this is the most advanced of the three methods, and because of that, it also gives us the most of information. It evaluates slope and intercept. It gives us error estimates for both parameters. And then there are also three assumptions for residuals that need to be confirmed. So it does require a little bit more work, but it really gives us the residuals analysis can really reveal us a lot about the data. So, and another downside of the ordinary least square regression method is that it also requires a fair amount of data to obtain reliable parameter estimates. So this is kind of more or less everything what we wanted to cover today. So it's a time for a second quiz. If we can show that on the screen now. And then Travis will make a short recap, and if he has something to add.
Okay, so we're going to start that second round of quiz questions. And Travis or Polona, we've had people ask if you could read the questions out loud because some of them are following along on the phones.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So I'm going to start that quiz now. So feel free to read them out to them.
I don't see them, so if you can read them, Travis.
All right, so the R-squared and adjusted R-squared values tell us what? A, if our model is right. B, proportion of the sample variation that is explained by it cut off, but it's supposed to say the model at the end there. And then C, the estimate of our OLS slope. All right, so non-normality of our OLS residuals indicates A, a lack of fit, B, our model is not optimal, C, the confidence in our prediction limits is not reliable, or D, all of the above.
Okay. It looks like the right answer for that one was D, so good job, everybody.
Oh.
All right.
Yeah, so real quick, I think we'll just make a couple final remarks and then answer a few more questions at the end. So just to recap on everything that Polona said there, when you're looking to do trend analysis, really make sure that you spend a bit of time exploring your data before you start doing your tests. And once you have fit your data, especially with OLS, don't totally rely on your R-squared and adjusted R-squared values, because they might really not be revealing the problems that your underlying assumptions need to have validated. Also, if you are thinking about transforming your data, take time to think about the processes that might be underlying that need, such as those first-order or zero-order reactions that we discussed for a moment there. And really, as always, when in doubt, consult a statistician. And I know that was brought up a bunch with the non-detect stuff, and I can't say it enough there that that one is, it's a tricky subject, and if you're not totally sure on what you should be doing, you need to talk to people who might know better. And that doesn't even mean just one, maybe a few, because people will have different opinions on how to handle non-detects in different situations. And as always, similar to the outliers with last time, make sure you're really documenting all the steps in your analysis and the decisions that you decide to make. But yeah, so real quick, if we want to jump into a few questions that we had. Jean, did you want to read the one I had highlighted there?
Sure. So one of the participants has asked, what should you do if your data appear to exhibit a seasonal trend?
Right, and so I picked that one just because it can apply to all of them. Really, if you're doing ordinary least squares regression and when you view your data, you don't see a linear trend, whether that be a seasonal trend or, in our case, when we looked at it initially, there looked like there was maybe a quadratic trend to it, something nonlinear. You want to, A, figure out if there are any transformations that work best for your situation. So for us, we had happened to look at the log normal transformation because it is sometimes effective for fixing a quadratic curve. For seasonal things, you might want to look at aggregating your data in some way to get rid of that seasonality issue. But again, really any of those are, it's going to just poorly beat this dead horse. That you should talk to a statistician if the answer isn't clear to you as to how you want to handle it. You need to make sure to talk to someone that it is clear to them. And then so there were some other questions in there that individuals had asked, and I just got a little ahead of myself and had answered directly to them, but I realized that some of them might be helpful for you all. Someone had asked the same question that had come up in the previous webinar of just how do you save all of the work that you have done inside of ProUCL. So
my screen, I can
yep.
show.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So you're just going to highlight the...
So let me just try to save this QQ plot at the end. So I highlight it here on the navigation panel, the name of the item that you want to save. You go to File, Save As.
Yep, and then
give it a name, and you save it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Cool. And then someone else had asked, as far as ProUCL's need to have a numeric value for the time estimates, could you also have a text column in there? The answer is you could. If you need it for your... for some sort of presentation sense or something, feel free to throw it in there, but you're not going to be able to use it for any of the data analysis. So when you're selecting your independent and dependent variable, you're just going to want to make sure you don't select that character column and, in fact, select the numeric one.
And another remark here is that this is especially important if you have unevenly spaced events. Because if you don't capture that your events are unevenly spaced, like let's say 5 days followed by 10 days in between the events and something like that, then you may miss the shape of your trend.
Right. But yeah, I think that was And also, I'm aware that there are a lot of questions asking for a pro-UCL session just on dealing with non-detection trend analysis. And agreed, I think that would be a great one to do. But since the main focus of this three-part webinar was just getting people comfortable with really all of the available tools that we have in pro-UCL at the moment, since that's such a large topic, it deserves really its own webinar and not to be shoved in 5 minutes of trying to explain it. So that's why we kind of pushed it off a bit in this one, that it's a tricky topic that we couldn't really cover and cover everything else that we did today as well. So just want to let everyone know that their concerns are noted. But yeah, Jean, anything else?
Well, I think we just have a couple of other reminders in terms of the follow-on sessions. We're coming right up to our scheduled end time, and we still do have a few more reminders to walk through. So Travis or Polona, can you take the audience through just a few final reminders, and then we'll close things out today?
So next session, which I believe is on March 9th, correct, Jean? Is going to be discussing background site comparisons as well as UCLs. So that one, I know we finally get to the UCL part of Pro-UCL. Very exciting. And also, as always, our contact information is going to be available at the end here if you want to get a hold of us. But yeah, I think that's most of the housekeeping stuff.
Right. Well, with that, let me walk through just a few final reminders before we do officially close out today's session. I want to thank the nearly 500 people who joined us for today's live broadcast. We'll walk through just a couple of things, but we often get questions about how you can stay informed when webinars like this get announced or are available. I encourage you to visit us at cluin.org, the Cleanup Information Network, or sign up for our free monthly newsletter, Tech Direct, because we will announce sessions like this and on other topics related to cleaning up hazardous waste sites on those sites and newsletters. Copies of the presentation materials are available already to download from the seminar links or resources page, as well as contact information for our presenters and organizers. So you'll see those links already available on the middle right under related URLs. Simply scroll to the link of interest, click it to select it, and then press the Browse To button to open it up. For those of you replaying the recorded version online, those links are still active. I've also pasted the URLs right into the Q&A window, so you can also sort of click on those or copy them down and open them up. The links are still active even if you were replaying the recorded version. I would ask each of you to fill out our online feedback form to let us know what you thought of today's delivery. One of the most common questions I get is if we offer certificates, and we will generate a participation certificate for you as soon as you fill out and submit your feedback. Just be sure to check the box at the very bottom of the form certifying you were either here for the whole live event or you replayed the whole recorded thing, and make sure your email address is entered correctly on that form. As long as those two things are done, as soon as you submit your feedback, you'll then be able to print out or save a copy of a participation certificate, something like this one, for your own records. If you join together as a group, each person in that room can actually fill out the form on their own, whether you registered as an individual or not. So if you happened to get a bunch of coworkers together in a room to join you, please be sure to share that link to the feedback form with those who joined you in the room so that they can fill out the form and get their own certificate for their own records. As noted, today's session was recorded, just like the others in this series. So in just a few days, you'll get an automatic email from me with instructions on how you can replay today's training. So again, if you weren't able to follow along in real time, you'll still be able to follow those instructions to download the sample data sets in Pro-UCL and then watch the webinar and sort of pause and restart it as needed to follow along with those exercises. So hopefully you'll all be on for our third and final webinar in the series, and please be sure to take time to share your feedback for our broadcast. We do read each and every one of your submissions, and it helps us to improve future deliveries. So with that, I'll go ahead and formally conclude today's live broadcast. Thank you so very much for joining us.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Jane.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.